You are listening to a very patriotic episode of the Pungus Podcast, episode 548.
Bubble up! Hey, strictly bubbling. Hey, strictly bubbling. Oh, the temperature is below zero. Canada cold. Oh, bada bada bada, Canada cold. Ribbits are getting a little damp, Canada cold. Oh, bada bada bada, Canada cold. I will be said, Lord, after me left Jamaica as an entertainer, me catch a here Jamaica and me go to Canada. Say, after playing land, me reach immigration. Them say to Peter Metro, what your occupation? Me occupation, I am a musician. Them carry me in a room and start to fling question. Them have me 3 7s and me tell them 21. Them have me 7 3s, just a small woodland. Them say to Peter Metro, man is most a madman. If you love Peter, make sure help me sing this song. Canada cold, oh bada bada bada, Canada cold. Repeat again, tell it to them. Canada cold, oh bada bada bada, Canada cold. I would me say, Lord, me say me living in the city called Toronto. Me chooks in a me house and I watch me video. No reenough.
And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. And of course, today is Canada Day. And more, are you psyched for Canada Day? Do you have your maple leaf flag on your front lawn? Are you running around with like a maple leaf bandana on your head? And are you like blasting like April Wine and the Guess Who? And not Neil Young because he's not a citizen anymore. But you know, other Canadian bands. What's that band? The heavy metal guys. That the guy said probably the most obscene thing for some reason I've seen live in concert. What's the name of that band? The heavy Anvil. Have you been rocking Anvil all day?
Yes. Yes, it's been nonstop CanCon, for sure. Well, actually, I'm really excited about the song I'm gonna play because like that's something I've been listening to a lot too. So like, and that's a Canadian artist. So good things are coming the way later on.
Meanwhile, 4th of July is just around the corner. Hallie Bullitt, you got your American flags out, your hot dogs. Are you ready for play some American music? Like, what's iconic American music, man? Everything I'm thinking of is British and Australian. I don't know, REM, Pixies, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons is closer, but you're still so far away from anything that anyone else would say was like American music, right? Like, there's like, I don't know, people think of it as like
Jimi Hendrix.
Garth Brooks or something,
right? Yeah,
that as like really American music. Yeah. But I don't know why. I guess, I think country music is technically like, it is the most popular genre of music in America, isn't it? It sells the most copies, I think, albums.
That was true for a long, long, long time. But with the recent explosion of hip hop popularity over the past 5 years, I'm not sure if that is or is not true anymore. It might be. You might be right. Yeah. I don't know.
Although they love country music up in Canada, too, which I was always surprised by. Right? I've always been like kind of shocked by that. I'm like, well, this isn't like why you guys are supposed to be like smart and like working all this like hillbilly stuff that's way more condescending towards country music than I meant it to be, but you know what I'm saying.
There is a lot of modern country music is pretty bad, but there's a lot of wonderful and beautiful hillbilly music, and I will tell you the exact reason with the exact song. One time I had to drive from Harrisburg to Jersey City late at night, and there was a snowstorm chasing me on the back end, literally probably 10 minutes behind me, a straight up snowstorm. And I was driving, and I was listening to Johnny Cash live at Madison Square Garden, and they brought out Mother Carter, whatever, I forget what her first name is.
June?
And she sang, what's that?
June?
No, that's the daughter of the mother.
I
forget her name. And she sings Wildwood Flower, which is the hillbilliest of all hillbilly music, and it is a beautiful, beautiful song, Hallie Bullitt. So I will not have you defaming hillbillies on this podcast. You may defame white trash. You may defame racist people. But just because people are hillbillies doesn't mean they're bad.
No, there's some great, great, great country music. And you heard me correct myself as soon as I said it. But doesn't it surprise you? Like, so I ended up Chris and I took this cheesy vacation to an all-inclusive resort because it was just like it was all covered by credit card points. It was like honestly like the corniest experience of our entire lives, and like one day I'll talk more about it. But there were just a lot of Canadians at this resort, like a lot of Canadians. And they were just all listening to like they were just all listening to country music. And I was like, this is so, I would never, ever, ever, ever have guessed that. I was like really shocked.
Well, there you have it. American culture and Canadian culture meet together on the country context, if you will. Let's see here. We got a lot of news to cover. So let's play a song and then we'll come back and we'll hit the news. And more, you said you got a song, who said they got a song they want to play in celebration of their country? Who was that? Was that M or Hallie?
That was me.
Let's hear your patriotic song.
All right. So Canada Day is a bit conflicted because, Canada's not super great because of the Indigenous genocide, among other things. So one artist that I've been listening to a lot lately, and I love her work, she's an Inuk throat singer, and her name's Tanya Tagak, and this is Aorta, and it's off of her 2016 album, Retribution.
Killer guy,
that was Tanya Taguk, who's also on a couple of effed up records, if I recall correctly.
She is.
And there you go. So let's hit the news, if we will. The Descendants, an all-American band, they released a new track called Like the Way I Know, and that's off Ninth and Walnut, which is their new album coming out on July 23 on Epitaph. And the kicker is it's all songs written by the original or the proto-original Descendants from before Milo Goes to College, Wild Ride era, and that kind of stuff. The track was written by Joel Nolte, I think, right? No, David Nolte. David Nolte, of course, of The Last. The Last were a proto-punk power pop band that influenced all the early SST bands, Black Flag, Descendants, Minutemen, all very influenced by The Last. And this is a track by David Nolte. And Hallie Bullet, are you down with the retro neo Descendants?
Yeah, I thought this was amazing, actually. Like, I liked this so much that that's like kind of all I have to say about it. I like literally just like, you know, I always take like notes just so I remember, you know, we listen to like a lot of stuff for each episode and I just like take some notes so I remember what in the world I thought about it or what I wanted to say about it. All I have written is, wow, this is awesome. That's it. That's all I have to say. I liked it.
And more, what's your stance?
I also really liked it. I thought it was really good. I am very excited for this album to come out. And like I kept seeing that it's they released a version of it before. So I went and I listened to the older version and then listened to the newer version again. And it's like the older version's good. But there's just something about like Milo's older voice that kind of gives the song more like oomph. You know, so I thought that was really cool. And then there's an interview on Loudwire with Bill Stevenson, and he said that Descendants are working on two new albums. So I thought that was pretty cool too. Just kind of stumbled across that, but I'm really, really looking forward to it. John, what'd you think?
Well, I have to correct myself. Is while David Nolte was one of the main guys in The Last, he's an original Descendant. I didn't know that. He's not on any of the recordings, but he's their original singer. I didn't know that. So there's that. Yeah, I thought this was real cool. Honestly, I love Milo Goes to College. After Milo Goes to College, I think they got a little too poppy for me, a little too pop punk, not enough edge for myself. So I've been digging the new tracks. I think it's interesting that they've been recording the new tracks, not in a super produced style. Like Bill Stevenson is a great producer in that he really does slick sounding recordings, which works for a lot of bands, but sometimes it can sap some bands of the power. But I mean, a lot of bands love that super slick sound. All the fat record bands do. And so people dig it. I like a little bit of a more raw sound. So I thought it was interesting that they took one of the original raw tracks, which does kind of sound like a Last track, if you will, and gave it some of that shiny production, but not overly shiny. So I thought it was really well done. I'm excited. I think it's just going to be a really cool release. And I guess I am kind of surprised that they waited so long to do this project. But I guess because the Descendants have not broken up but gone on a hiatus so many times, whenever they got back together, they never really had a chance to revisit old stuff. They always had to do new stuff because they got back together again. So now that they've been back together for about 4 or 5 years or 6 years again, it's cool that they're getting to do some interesting things, and this is really good. So I'm definitely down with this. Speaking of something else that is also really, really good, Chrome. They've released a new single, the first single off the new album. The new album is called Scarapy, and the single is of the same name. This release is very interesting for two reasons. It's interesting because it's got longtime member Helios Creed on guitar, of course. And Chrome really is Damon Edge and Helios Creed. And Damon Edge passed away in the 90s, so since then it's just been Helios Creed. Although for a while, Chrome was originally Damon Edge. Then it was Damon Edge and Helios Creed. Then they broke up. Then Chrome was just Damon Edge. Then Damon Edge passed away. Then Chrome was Helios Creed. So it's basically Helios Creed. But what's also interesting is this record also has Hillary Haynes, who was never truly a member of Chrome, but is on all the classic Chrome records. Third from the Sun, Blood on the Moon, Alien Soundtracks, all the classic, like all the best, like, classic period Chrome albums. He's on there. I think he's even on I think he's on Dead in Line, which is like a mind-blowing awesome track. Other members, there's a guy called Lou Minotti 8 or yeah, Luminati, and it's not his real name, of course. He's kind of like the main right-hand guy to Helios Creed right now. And there's also Tommy Cyborg and Aleph Omega, who are players that have been in the modern Reformed Chrome for the past 5 or 10 years. The Reformed Chrome has been, honestly, like, usually when bands get back together or, like, you know, it's one guy, it's usually not that good. The past, like, 4 Chrome albums have been, like, super-duper great, like almost as good as the classic stuff, like, surprisingly, surprisingly good. And that does happen sometimes when you bring in a younger guy that understands the older stuff, and he's kind of the energy that can fire the older guys back up and get them kind of focused. The exact same thing happened with Nicky Garrett and Nick Turner of Hawkwind when they did their Nick Turner Space Gypsy project, which was phenomenal. Also on Cleopatra Records. This is on Cleopatra Records. Do you guys want to give your reaction, and then I'll tell, like, the weirdness behind this, or should I tell the weirdness and then we'll get your reaction?
Well, I mean, I'll give you guys one guess as to whether I was into this or not.
I'm going to say no.
I'm sure it's great. I mean, listen, if you tell me it's great, I'll believe you. It's just like my ears can't even, like, it's not the kind of thing that I just, like, respond to. It's like, it almost feels like with music like this is like, it's just like the door is closed to me. My brain just, like, cannot crack open the door to, like, understand what's enjoyable about it. But so this is good, John. You're telling me this is good.
I'm telling you, this is real good. Chrome is real good.
Okay.
If the listeners don't know who Chrome is actually a first wave punk band from the Bay Area. Although, like, whether or not you consider them punk or not, I say they're like punk as anything, but like they were kind of like ahead of their time. Like, they were doing like Nine Inch Nails and Skinny Puppy kind of stuff, even Bauhaus stuff before all those bands. So they were like too ahead of their time and too far out. So yes, this is great.
Em, did you also think it was great?
Yes. I thought I was gonna.
Well, the thing is, it's why I enjoy talking about this music with you guys, because it's like you help me, like, try to figure out how to enjoy it. Wait. So go ahead, Em. What were you gonna say?
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was really good. I liked the vocals and, like, the vocal effects and, like, kind of the creepy sort of, like, backing vocals and stuff. So I thought that was really good. And, like, I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to check it out when it comes out for sure.
So here's the weirdness about this. It's coming out on Cleopatra, which is not weird. But, I mean, Em and Hallie, are you guys aware of, like, Cleopatra Records?
Yeah.
So, like, Cleopatra Records is, like, they put out, like, so much stuff, and some of it is absolute garbage, and it looks semi-legit at best. Like, they're putting out a record by Soft Cell called Tainted Love, but it's not the album. Well, the album is called, what, Nonstop Erotic Cabaret, but it's, like, these weird remixes and, like, demo live stuff. It's, like, who did you license these from? Well, I don't think you licensed them from Mark Almond, you know. But then they'll also put out, like, some really incredible stuff, like some Hawkwind stuff and Chrome stuff, so... Cleopatra, like, some of the stuff they put out is absolute garbage, and some of it is, like, fantastic. And, like, usually a label will be like Bomp, where, like, everything is semi-sketch, or like Easy Action, where, you know, the source is up to for debate, or they'll, like, put out, like, you know, totally legit stuff. But Cleopatra, like, just, like, I don't know what the angle, like they'll put out, like they recently put out a William Shatner album, and I think a David Hasselhoff. Like, who's buying a William Shatner Christmas album? Like we laugh about it. Like, oh, look, he's singing with, you know, David Hasselhoff. But who's buying that, you know?
I have never known.
You know, so I almost wonder if, like they have good distribution. And this is pure speculation. I wonder if they have, like, great distribution. So, like, record shops or distributors will just, like, okay, give me one of everything. And then, like, that Shatner CD will just sit on the shelf forever, and then it gets discounted and sold for $3. Like, is that the business model? You know, like, they've been putting out this thing called Hawkestral, which is a Hawkwind spin-off band. I mean, sure, some Hawkwind maniacs are into that, but how many is there, like, 200? Are they making 200 CDs? You, like, how can that possibly pay? You know, like, I can understand, like, a tiny label doing 200 CDs just because they want to do it. But I guess Cleopatra's label is, we'll put out 100 titles a year and we'll sell 100, literally 200 copies of each, you know. So here's the weird thing about this, and I'm not really talking outside of school. Helios Creed is a total weirdo. I interviewed him once, and half of our conversation, and he was super cool and super nice. And actually, if you ever seen Chrome, like I saw Chrome live twice, but like one time was Helios Creed / Chrome, the second time was Chrome, and the second time was way better. It was in this like place in Baltimore. There was literally like 30 people there, and I knew Helios Creed was tall, but I didn't realize how tall he was. He comes out, he's literally 6'6", and he's super skinny, and he's got a top hat on, and I'm like, holy shit, you know what I mean? And like the rest of the band have like on these Terminator 2 sunglasses and stuff, you know, and they just start playing again. Like, all these sounds are coming out, and like, you know, I mean, like, I love live music, and I probably like a longer concert than most people. I've heard a lot of people say, I get bored after 40 minutes. Like, I want like an hour and a half show if I can get. Chrome was playing for like 2.5 hours, and the whole time I'm like, yes, yes, give me more. Like, I was enthralled for 2.5 hours. It was so freaking good, you know what I mean? And so anyways.
Is it like theatrical? Is it like a theatrical show?
No, honestly, not really. They kind of just like stand there, but yeah. like there's so many sounds coming out like everywhere. It basically sounds like evil robots in space crashing into a planet. That's what it sounds like. You know? And so if you want to hear that for 2.5 hours, you'll love Chrome. You know, like they got songs about like there's a song called like Insect Humanoid, or there's another song called Android Rebellion, but there's some songs like make no sense whatsoever, like Static Gravity, like it's just like super far out stuff. And Helios Creed is a weird, weird guy. I interviewed him once, and half the conversation was him talking about how he loves collecting toy train, like, you know, like what do you call them, Lionel trains, like he's got dozens and dozens of them, and which makes sense. And so, like, one time the president at the band, the President of the United States of America, they were on tour, and they like came over his house, and they played with trains for like 7 hours, to the point where they like missed their own concert because they were playing with trains in his basement. Like, you know. So anyways, he's done a lot of acid. I mean, he's done a lot of acid, and I don't know if he stopped doing acid or he's still doing acid, but acid, you know, if you trip too far, you can trip too far, you know. And so a little while ago, he had a big freak out, and this is like public, like he had a big freak out, and he had his big freak out not that long ago, but like now they're announcing this new album. So my question is did they record this album and then he freaked out? Did they just record this album like a couple of weeks ago? Or is this put together from scraps, which is not beyond what I would guess Cleopatra would be willing to do? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, he had a bad freak out not that long ago, and I felt like, and it wasn't even funny. It was, like, sad, you know? So, I don't know, man. So I'm curious about, I mean, I'm definitely going to buy it, but I'm just curious about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And I wonder, like, will you ever know? Like, they're not, you know, if they put it together from scraps, they're certainly not going to put that out in like the PR announcement.
Yeah, right.
But they would probably say, you know, they would probably say if it was something that was like recorded. Like, how long ago did he have the freak out?
Like 8 weeks.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. So it was probably, you know, it was done before. Then the record was just done before that, right?
We will see. I do know that they released a Chrome remix CD like about a year ago, and Helios Creed's like, I didn't know anything about this, you know, but you should check it out, you know. So, and Cleopatra's, I know some other bands where Cleopatra has, they have the rights to stuff, but they don't even ask the band if they should put it out, and they just put it out, you know. So
that's so crummy, and that's just so like, yeah, it's so like
sketch, semi-sketch.
Yeah, it's, you know? Just sketchy. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so like I know like they'll like repress some records or say we're putting out a limited edition of this record because now it's on pink vinyl, and the band won't even know about it, and they're like, well, we wish you could have told us, we would have promoted it, you know. It's like, you know. So anyways, Chrome, the mystery of Chrome continues. Here's another mystery, the mystery of Gully Boys. M told us about Gully Boys in the new track Russian Doll, which also has some mild robotic effects to it.
Yeah, for sure. So they are a band from Minneapolis, and this is their first single since signing to Get Better Records. They like just signed to them, so that's pretty good. I really liked the song. all, so they're, it's a three people, and they all sing on it too, which is really, really cool. And how everyone's voices go together and how, like, you can kind of sort of tell, like, distinct who's singing. So that was really interesting too. So yeah, I think this band really has potential and really has like something. I think they're gonna go they're on their way and they're just gonna like keep growing. Their other releases, they released an EP last year or the year before, and it's also really good. So I'm all in favor of Gully Boys. I think everyone should check them out. What did you guys think of them?
Did you like this, John?
Yeah, I did like this. And I thought this, I like this a lot. What I thought was interesting about this track was how much difference a production can make. If they produce this like Paramore and gave it that super shiny sound, I'm like, oh, I hate this. But because it's got kind of that, like, not lo-fi, but kind of, I guess, darker or grimier effects and some robot effects or affectations in the back, I actually thought this sounded really cool, and it sounded like halfway between, well, a third way between pop punk, straight up punk, and kind of like dark synth music, and I dug it.
Yeah, I couldn't get into it. I don't know why. I have a weird thing where it's like, because I love like rock and punk, and I also, as you guys know, like I love pop, like real pop. Like I will roll down my windows and listen to that Olivia Rodrigo like single with like No Shame. Like I love like pop. There's like a way where sometimes when they meet in the middle, I'm just not down. It's like I want like I don't want those two foods together on my plate. Like these vocals were just too, for something that's like a rock song or like a like punky, it's like the vocals were just like too poppy for me or something. It's just like my own personal like taste. It's like I'm listening to it, I'm hearing where it's like it's well done, it's just, it's like for some reason it's just like it's not for me. If someone's gonna sing like that, like poppy, then I just want it to be just like a straight up pop song. It's like a chocolate and peanut butter thing. I'm like, get that pop voice out of my rock song or something. Does that make any sense?
Are you saying you do like chocolate and peanut butter, or you don't like chocolate and peanut butter?
I'm saying I do, but if someone did not, you know, they're just like, those are both fine things, but I don't want them together, you know? Like, it sounds like I just confused you guys. Anyhow, I wasn't sure I liked it.
Well, speaking of something else that I'm not sure if I liked it or not, Electric Six, who many people who have heard Electric Six, don't know they've heard Electric. Electric Six had two pretty big songs. One was I'm Going Down to the Gay Bar, which I thought that was the lower of the hit. I thought the bigger hit was Live Wire with Jack White doing hidden vocals. Anyway, that was the band Electric Six. They're still around. They've been around 25 years now or so. They are putting out a covers album called Streets of Gold. However, as soon as I saw this cover, I'm like, I've seen this before, and I know I've seen it before because it reminds me a great deal of Red Cross's album, Beyond the Door, which was Red Cross's newest album and is, if you ask me, by far their very best album. Halle Bullet, Streets of Gold, Coinky Dink, nice homage, or Cold-Blooded Ripoff? What do you think? Because I think the two covers are strikingly similar.
They really are. You're right. They really are similar. It seems – I don't know. It seems to me like a coincidence, not to say that this band couldn't be like fans of Red Cross, like they absolutely could be. But I feel like they're like original and unique enough that I think if they were going to use the cover as their inspiration, I almost feel like they would have made it more obvious, or they made it obvious that it was like a tribute to this other thing. I just like this band is so out there and so like kind of doing their own thing that I just feel like it's one of those weird things where just like two people had like the same cool idea, like separately from each other. Don't you think?
I'm not sure I agree with that because it could be this is the case I deal with in my day job many times is a t-shirt design, like a freelancer says, hey, check out my design. You should buy this for your t-shirt company. The guy's like, yeah, it's an awesome design. And the t-shirt producer puts it out And it turns out that the freelancer just ripped the design off somebody else, you see. So if we look at these two designs, it's a door in the middle. It's a door not attached to a building in the middle of a desolate area. Both desolate area. Both shots have the door kind of like right below the landscape of the horizon. Both are purple backgrounds at night, and both have dusk descending at night. And both of the doors are yellow, and both of the lettering is yellow.
Put it like that.
You know, now
when you break it down blow by blow like that, it's pretty incriminating.
The crazy thing is, striking coincidences do happen in real life. Fun fact, there's two Dennis the Menaces. There's Dennis the Menace in the United States, a naughty kid that causes trouble and annoys his neighbors. And there's Dennis the Menace in the UK, a naughty kid that annoys his neighbors. And they were developed at the exact same time independently and debuted within weeks of each other. And there's no way either creator of either Dennis the Menace could have seen the other one work. Similarly, did you know there's two Harry Potters?
No.
There's a Harry Potter, a kid that goes to wizard school and learns to become a wizard and finds out that he's got a destiny, that he's the best wizard. And another story about a kid that goes to wizard school and learns that he's got the destiny to become an amazing wizard, which was written before the other Harry Potter, but it was proven that they weren't written, that there was no knowledge of the other. So you know, quinky things do happen, you know, but sometimes they don't either, you know.
Well, and sometimes artists, like, you know, sometimes artists sort of accidentally regurgitate something that they've seen, and they, right, you know, like that happens all the time, where like Flaming Lips claims that they didn't realize they'd ripped off that Cat Stevens song. It's like they obviously had, but maybe you give them the benefit of the doubt and you say, okay, well, it was just subconscious, like, you know, whichever member of the Flaming Lips was like writing that melody was like, oh, this sounds really, really good, and they just don't realize it sounds really, really good because you fucking heard it before, you dumbass. It's like a world famous song written by another person, you know. So I'm almost wondering, like, could it be something like that, you know?
Hallie, you bring up the most famous copyright infringement lawsuit of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's egregious. It is. It just is the Cat Stevens song. When the first time I heard it, I was like, are you kidding me? you kidding me?
I was referring to George Harrison's My Sweet Lord and He's So Fine. That's probably the most famous copyright infringement lawsuit of all time. The argument of the owner of He's So Fine, which wasn't is that the Ronettes, He's So Fine, or
I don't think so.
Ronnie Mac.
Yeah.
So apparently the melody of My Sweet Lord, like, if you think, like, you know, I really want to see you, do 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 do, and He's So Fine, they sound nothing alike. But if you look at the actual notes and the chords, they're somewhat similar. And that is one of the most famous copyright infringement lawsuits of all time, but also one of the lesser clear ones, in that it's like, well, yeah, it's kind of the same chords. And George Harrison shot himself on the foot on the stand because they said, well, could you have known about that song? And the way they prove that George Harrison could have known about the song is that the Beatles and that recording was in the charts at the same time, which honestly, George Harrison probably had heard. Well, actually, he admitted to hearing He's So Fine. So, but George Harrison shot himself in the foot, and he said, well, subconsciously, I guess I could have replicated the chords by accident. And that's what nailed him in that lawsuit, you know. So, but does anyone really think that George Harrison, like, and I'm definitely not a George Harrison. I mean, I like George Harrison, but I don't really care about George Harrison's merit one way or another, you know. But, like, does anyone really think that he's like, I'm going to rip off He's So Fine, but I'm going to call it My Sweet Lord? Like, no. You know what I mean? Like, so it very well could be a unknowing ripoff as well. And maybe he did subconsciously rip it off, you know.
I had no idea about that case, John. Yeah. Because to my ear, I don't feel like those songs are identical. Like, not at all. Maybe just because the feel of them is so different, but it's like it did that. I know both of those songs pretty well, and that comparison never like hit me in the face the way the Flaming Lips Cat Stevens debacle did, you know.
Well, you bring up a great point, and the point is the lyrics aren't the same. It's just the melody transition is the same, and there's one part where it goes like do 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 do, And so does George Harrison, you see. And so, but the question is, well, is that even, I mean, even if you copy that, maybe you can, maybe that doesn't, maybe that's not unique enough to warrant copyright protection. You know, like if I go B-A-B-A-B, I mean, that's, you know, anyone can do that, you know. So that really was, I mean, that was kind of the same exact question that we had with the Marvin Gaye and that skeezy guy. What's his name? Thick. You know, and Farrell. You know, it's like, well, can you copyright a sound? You can't. And so that was probably a bad decision, honestly. Whereas George Harrison and He's So Fine, definitely on the fence, you know. So but here's He's
still So Fine. No, I just want to see if M is like as forgiving of this artist as I am, or if she's just like just plagiarism.
They definitely look similar. I don't think it's a blatant ripoff. But I think they definitely borrowed elements, like the door on the Electric Six record. It's the purple sky thing, like more sparkly in the doorway, and that looks like the actual sky on the Red Cross record. So I think, you know, there might be something, but other than that, I think it's stylized and they're different enough. But I think, you know, if it is like a small ripoff or if it is like a an homage to it, I could easily see it. But there are some differences.
See, for me, it's hard to get around the door in the middle of nowhere with the edges of the door are yellow and the background's purple. You know, it's hard to get around that. But of course, poor Red Cross always getting ripped off. Em and Hallie, can you name probably the bigger ripoff against poor Red Cross, which might not even really be a ripoff?
Oh, no, I can't. What is that?
Famously, Circle Jerks Group Sex, arguably the greatest punk rock record of all time. There are two songs that were Red Cross songs that Greg Henson took and they put new lyrics to. And actually, Red Cross even recorded them. What is it? It's not Standing in Front of a Poser. Is it Clorox Girls? I'll have to look it up real quick.
Yeah, which songs?
I'll tell you what, we shall look it up right now, because the argument is Greg Henson said, well, I wrote those riffs, so Red Cross doesn't own them. And Red Cross said, no, we wrote the riffs even though you played them. The song is, let's see, is it, Next Got the Hits. I'm listening right here. Maybe it is Next Got the Hits. It's either Next Got the Hits or Clorox Girl. No, Cover Band. Cover Band by Red Cross is – give me 1 second. I'm Googling group sex in my computer, which is Circle Jerks Group
and
Sex.
And Circle Jerks.
Yeah. Always a great thing to
be Googling.
Wow, it did not come up at all when I wanted to come up. Give me 1 second. I'm looking this up. You know? It is funny. Look, like – I almost bought a Circle Jerks shirt that said group sex. And I'm like, you totally forget what, like, the connotations of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like if I'm just walking around town with a shirt that says group sex Circle Jerks, like. All right, here we go. Cover Band and Live Fast, Die Young are the same song.
Wow,
meanwhile,
yeah.
Of course, I Don't Care was a Black Flag song, and so was Wasted. But also, Red Tape by the Circle Jerks was originally a Black Flag song. And Group Sex was originally a Black Flag song, though the lyrics to Group Sex are different than the Black Flag version, which wasn't called Group Sex.
Listen to all this. Listen to all these little factoid gems we're getting from John Gentile.
And people often use it as an opportunity to attack Group Sex. But I say, aha, that's what makes Group Sex amazing, is the members of these different bands were able to recontextualize these things and honestly make them better than they were before and make it more of a bulletproof album. So I salute Circle Jerks for ripping people off, even though arguably they didn't rip people off. And it's a great album. You know what I mean? So let's play a song. Let's play some Chrome. Let's play should we play something more listenable or something that's Sonic Destruction? What do you guys want to hear?
Sonic Destruction.
This is Insect Humanoid by Chrome, a song about an insect humanoid eating a human by Chrome. Insect Humanoid. I'm And we're back. And speaking of humanoids that eat other humanoids, Jeff Bezos. everyone's best friend and guy that has helped out mom and pops everywhere and has helped us get through COVID-19 as the hundreds of Amazon commercials that I saw that said basically, you know, Amazon is here for you and we're going to help you out during this terrible time, even though Amazon arguably is one of the main causes of the COVID-19 problem. And even though Amazon.com unquestionably is the cause of problem of supply chain problems because they eliminated all the other supply chains through their ruthless, brutal business tactics and weren't found to be a monopoly, even though they totally are. No, Amazon is your friend and they're here to help you out. Anyways, Amazon is even here to help you out some more. They are doing a vinyl of the month club, where basically for $25 a month plus shipping, you get a surprise classic rock record mailed to your door as selected by Amazon curators. So far, people have gotten Pink Floyd's The Wall and The Clash's London Calling, two albums which detail how the machinations of giant business mutilate artists and their vision in the name of profit, which of course is the main theme behind The Wall. And so there's a lot of funny comments all around the internet. And of course, I love on Punk News, whenever we post things that kind of beat on big business, people come out of the woodwork, and sometimes they're already been out of the woodwork for a while, and they're like, you know, Jeff Bezos is just an honest business guy playing by the rules, and he and I are the same kind of people, even though he's a 100 billionaire and I live in my mom's basement. We're the same kind of people, so you need to get tough while I'm here in my mom's basement. You just don't like business, but I'm a big shot like Jeff Bezos, you know. So I have often kind of been annoyed when back in the day when Punk News articles were a little bit more slanted, but every once in a while I step out of my objective tomb or cell and you just have to spank somebody. Like when Smash Mouth played a concert at the height of COVID, we had to spank them. You know, so I had to spank Jeff Bezos over this, and I'm not sorry I did. Hallie Bullitt, did I go beyond the pale? And also, Jeff Bezos, is he the worst or is he the absolute worst? And also, as many Punk News comments mentioned, this is the wrong way to do it. Isn't the correct way to do it? You get the first 12 for a penny and then you get them shipped to your house.
Okay, the first thing I have to say is this was one of my favorite John Gentile articles. I loved that you just didn't even like pretend to be having some sort of like journalist objectivity here. It was just one really strong, hilarious opinion after another. I like thought this article was so funny. You were like Amazon has whetted its fangs. Oh God, it made me laugh. And I'm with you. Like some of the commenters were like, "What are you telling me? You don't order off Amazon?" It's like, actually, yeah, I don't order off Amazon, and so could you. It's not that fucking hard, actually.
Right.
Yes, you could easily not order off Amazon if that's so inconceivable to you. I'm not really sure how like punk you are, and I don't like the like, "Are you punk or are you not?" like accusations. But I was like, come on, dude. You know, order from someplace else, pay a little bit of shipping. It's not a big deal. But yeah, I don't know. This is Jeff Bezos. I don't know. I just don't even know. I obviously don't like Amazon. I just absolutely refuse to give them my money. I just don't like it. And this is just, it to me seems to take all the fun and all the cool out of record collecting, which is like, if it's not fun and it's not cool, why are you collecting records in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't totally understand who, I mean, what, like old people, like, is this for like old hippies? Like who's going to be a part of this record club? Do you feel like, you know, John, I don't know who these record collectors are.
I don't know. I, you know, like Sub Pop and a third Man, they all have like record clubs, which I've been a part of a few of those. And I've always been just because I'm getting all these records that are cool, but I don't want, you know, but those kind of people tend to be like, you know, like 40, 45 year old dudes that are really into it, which is cool. I guess I certainly don't know. I think this is aimed at, you know, 15, 16, 17 year olds that like, wow, records are cool, which it is cool that when young people get into records or whatever. But I think they're like, wow, I can get records mailed to me. That's neat, I guess. You know, like who doesn't
like
already
it's
have?
Not, but from Amazon, it's not neat. It is, yes, if you're getting them mailed to you from Sub Pop, that's cool. It's like getting a record mailed to you from Amazon. It's like, who thinks that's cool? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but like, I don't, that's why I just like don't really, it seems to me like the like record people who are true like vinyl collectors, at least the people that I know, are like part of why they do it is because they like enjoy supporting artists. They enjoy supporting independent labels. They that's part of it. Their relationship to music has to do with supporting smaller things. So that I think that's why I can't wrap my brain around like who this is for, you know?
Well said. Well said.
I don't know. Like, does a 15 or 16 year old want to buy a copy of The Wall? Like, maybe. I don't think so. Do they want to buy a copy of The Wall?
Hallie, I must assume the answer is yes. When I sell records at the swap meet, young people buy The Wall. They buy Led. I mean, they love Stevie Nicks. Right. They love Led Zeppelin IV. They love The Wall. All the classic rock records. If a young person comes to my table, then they're probably going to buy one of, you know, Exile on Main Street, The Wall, London Calling, if I have it, but I never have it. Those records, you know.
But Pink you're Ford. Talking about, like, the little weirdos that show up at the, like, record fair. Like,
Right.
Are they, like, again, like, are those kids, like, are they going to think that it's cool to be part of an Amazon record club? Like, I don't think so. They think they can make money at this somehow. So they think someone's going to do this.
I was thinking that. I'm like, how much money can Amazon be making off this? But on the other hand, isn't Amazon's model is we make a little bit of money everywhere? You know, yeah. So I mean, you know, Emor, how many subscriptions did you order? 4 or 5?
6. Mm. Yeah.
Knocking up.
Oh, I need to get like at least, you know, 80 copies of The Wall. First off, I loved how this was written. This was awesome.
Thank you.
And, oh, 1 minute. I wrote it down. I just need to look at it. My favorite line is when you're talking about Bezos was unable to respond as he usually doesn't get out of his coffin until the sun goes down unless he hears a cry of a wounded animal right for the feasting. That was my favorite line. It was awesome. You. So, I think Jeff Bezos should stay in space, and that is the place for him. He doesn't need to put his little paws in everything. I also had the same thing, like, who's doing this? Like, who's going to be like, this is a great idea, you know, a copy of The Wall, a copy of London Calling, that it's not going to be special. Like, it's not going to be cool. It's going to be the exact same thing you can buy at Walmart, you know, not saying you should go to Walmart, but, you know, just stuff like that. It just seems like another way to kind of tax the workers to keep them from forming unions or something. Like, this is just garbage. I've never ordered from Amazon because there are so many other places. You can get better quality things. You can get things cheaper, and you get what you ordered like 100% of the time and then you're supporting like local people, and you're supporting you know, people who actually need the money and will use the money instead of hoarding it. Like, I don't know, you know, like, that's the thing is I don't like this is he has gross like a gross amount of wealth, you know, you think of it and it's like you know, like, what does one person need all that for? And why continue to make it off the backs of people?
He's got so much that he's now unquestionably evil. Like, it's cool to get rich. Yeah. I want to be rich. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But there's nothing he's got, what, $100 billion? There's nothing he can't buy with $20 billion that he can't buy with $100 billion, right? So with that $80 billion, he literally could save millions of people's lives. He could build educational institutions that will last forever, you know, or hundreds of years. He could go to all the hardworking farmers in America who are really having a tough time and saying, Here's 50 grand, you know, invest it in the farm. He could do any of that. He literally could be a Jesus-like figure in that, like, humanity, I have come to help everybody out. And he won't do it, even to the point where he won't even feel it if he did, you know.
Yeah.
So he's evil. With $1 billion, he could, every child that's got cancer in the United States, you know, he's like, if your kid has cancer, then I'll give you $50,000 and it'll make your life a little bit easier. And he wouldn't even feel – if I lost a quarter, that'd be the effect on me. You know what I mean? and mm-hmm. he won't even do that. You know, that's how evil he is. Like, really? Like, that's evil. You know, I did want to point out a couple of things. I'm just annoyed at so many. I should say that I'm annoyed at the commenters because we do have cool commenters, but it is getting a little rougher out there. And I think the cooler people are just tending not to comment as much. We have lots of cool Punk News Podcast listeners, which I really appreciate. I spoke to one today, actually. But anyways, like the one commenter is like, you know, record stores did this to themselves. It's like, yeah, I know a lot of guys that own record stores that became rich off their record store. Yeah, that definitely happened. You know, also they're like, record stores did this to themselves by selling CDs for $25. I bought CDs in New York City at the height of CD costs. It was never $25. That's yes, CDs got to $17, $18, and $19, but they were never $25. You know, that's bullshit. Third, people like, well, I like Amazon better because, you know, my local record store can't get the records that I want. I'm like, what planet are you on? First of all, like if a band puts out a new record, just order from the band directly. I haven't like ordered like a new record from a record store in years. You know, I get it from the band. The point of the record store is that you get, well, you get I bought new records from record stores of like the Rolling Stones reissues or that kind of a thing. Like I'm not going to order like, you know, a Chrome record from the record store. I'll get that from Chrome, the band, and then when I go to the record store, I'll get a used record or my Rolling Stone Half Speed Remastered, something like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or record store day stuff. It's like, my local record store doesn't get the records. That's bullshit, and you know that's bullshit. Like, I've been to a lot of record stores, and they all pretty much have the same kind of stuff, more or less. You know, the only thing they don't have would be like super obscure punk that John listens to, except for they do because Sit and Spin Records and Repo Records and Long in the Tooth Records in Philadelphia all get those records. But let's say you live in Omaha and there's not that many punk record stores. Fine. Get those get the new Lotion record from Lotion, you know, and get your Rolling Stone or Led Zeppelin record from the record store. Like, it's just a bullshit argument. You know it's bullshit. You know what I mean? Toughen up, people. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. That's not like a real gap that exists for those people.
Right.
Like, but my only option is to get this from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and honestly, even if Amazon is more convenient, but which it really isn't. So in the name of getting a record 4 days earlier, you'd rather make Bezos even richer rather than the hardworking guy that's running the record label or running the local record store. Like, that's what you're saying for 4 days. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
One last thing is I tried to get my most Nosferatu picture I could find of Bezos. I was thinking of doing a picture of Bezos and Nosferatu and putting below it, never seen in the same place at the same time. But I think I would have thought that would might have been too much. You know what I mean? Like too much of the schmear, you know?
Well, I mean, the article was like pretty out. I don't know if there's like – the picture is the thing that would have sent the article over the top.
I just love him with his hands out. He's got those Nosferatu claws. I just see. Anyways, man, Bezos is the worst. Anyways, speaking of someone that's the best, two people that are the best, Wanda Jackson and Joan Jett with Kenny Laguna are releasing what is being billed as Wanda Jackson's final album before she really retires. She's retired from touring, but she wants to do one more album, and it's called Encore. And it's co-produced by Joan Jett and Kenny Laguna. They've released one song so far. It's called It Keeps On Hurtin'. Joan is actually also on three songs, as is that band Pistol Annies, as well as Ellie and Ellie King. I have some definite thoughts on this and more. What do you think of Wanda King, the rockabilly legend? I'm not Wanda King. Wanda Jackson, the rockabilly legend.
I had not heard of her before today. So I listened to the song, I looked her up, very interesting, person for sure. It's not really what I listen to, but her voice, like, has held up pretty well, I think. Like, she sounds good. I want to see the songs with Joan Jett, how that's gonna go, and I think it's really nice, like, really good that she's putting out, like, a retirement record, because she had to retire from touring because of stuff beyond her control, and now she's kind of making the best of, like, a bad situation. Just like, I want to make music, this is what I'm going to do, and it's going to be, I'm going to put it out, and it's going to be good. So, yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
I think it's like I really just like when older women musicians just keep doing what they're doing, because, you know, a lot of women a lot of older women don't for a ton of reasons, but like there definitely is just this, I think oftentimes this cultural expectation that older women who were like popular as artists in their youth should just kind of like go away at a certain point. And like, I don't know. I'm so psyched on this project. Like she was such a badass, but I also kind of appreciate that she's not trying to be a badass. At least not on this single, on this, what was the single called? It Keeps Right On a Hurtin'. It's not rockabilly. It's just sort of a straight up, like heartfelt kind of country song. I don't know. She really is an icon. I love that she's still making music. I love that Joan Jett is like still finding cool things to be involved in and still also making music. And I love that she still collaborates with Kenny Laguna, because like how long has that collaboration been going on for? And I like that they're both working on this record. And yeah, I don't know, I think it's cool. That being said, like I don't know, like again, I think because what you were kind of saying, Em, is like it's not exact. Like it, you know, as I established at the beginning of this episode, like I don't totally listen to country music all the time, so I don't know that I'll pick this up. But it's just cool. I'm glad this is going to be out there. John, like, are you like, will you buy this album when it comes out? Like, are you how big a Wanda Jackson fan are you?
Hell yes, I am going to buy this record.
Amazing.
I'm sort of amazed at your two lukewarm reaction. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. Listen, Wanda Jackson is one of these country slash rock, like you know, Johnny Cash had like what, 70 records. Willie Nelson's got like 90 records. They're not all good, people, you know. So I think it's cool that she's like capping off the career with at least a good record. It might be a great record. I think she still sounds real good. I like this kind of country, and I think that the combo Wanda and Joan. I'm a huge Joan Jett fan, and Joan Jett and Kenny Laguna do have that very, I don't know if it's unique, but that very specific, extremely clean, polished sound, but not too polished. And I think that's going to be great for this record. I'm psyched for this. I'm definitely going to get it. And I think this is a great way for Wanda to kind of cap off the career, if you will. And I think it's cool that Joan is helping her out or maybe, you know, adding to it at least. And I just think this is an extremely tasteful release and a great one. It's probably not going to be Wanda's best album ever, but it's probably going to be a really good album. And I'm sure Joan – I think Joan Jett probably is uniquely the best person to do this. I mean, I can't think of – I mean, it's interesting because Joan Jett's not country, and I don't even know if Joan Jett has ever really done a country song. But, like, Joan Jett's a rocker. She appreciates music. She appreciates, you know, the first wave of rock, certainly. I mean, that's what her career is based in, the first wave of rock, you know. And so I think it's an intriguing, clever – and frankly, ideal collaboration. And I think I can't think of a person that would have been better to do this than Joan Jett. And I'm psyched for this.
No, you're right. And if I sounded lukewarm about it, it's like I'm not. Like, no, I really think this is cool. And you're right. I probably will listen to it.
Interestingly, for years and years and years, I thought Joan Jett's later albums were like bad. But then I actually listened to them. Joan Jett doesn't have a single bad album, and I'm not like fanboying. Like Joan, every single Joan Jett album is from good to great. Her last one, which was called, was it Any Weather or was that the single? I think anyway. Joan Jett's last album is fantastic. Like Joan Jett is like kicking ass still.
She like works really hard. Like I read this interview with her where she talked about like, you know, at this point in her career, you know, that when she sits down to write a song, like she still has to go through all of that, like just all the self-doubt you have as an artist. She worded it so well where it was like you have to sit down with your instrument and try to write something, and you have to convince yourself like, oh, like is anybody going to care about this? Like, is this worth me putting in the effort about this? I don't know. She just it made it clear to me that she still is really considers herself and like aims to be like a craftsperson. Like she still really like works at music and like dedicates herself to the work of being a songwriter and a performer. And I just have like, yeah, like nothing but respect for Joan.
Great musician, great songwriter, great performer. Very difficult interview. She doesn't give anything, you know, like any. Have we talked about this before on the show? Maybe we have.
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I interviewed Joan for Rolling Stone once, and she was cool. But it's, and I mean, I knew going into it, like she won't talk about anything personal, and I get it, like you don't want to talk about like your personal, like that's cool, you want to keep that separate, but you can talk about like I was feeling down, or I was feeling, you know, sad, or I was feeling really happy, like if you say, so Joan, you know, why is this song meaningful? And she's like, well, we wrote that song in B flat, and we know we wanted an up tempo rocker, and so we recorded it at 120 beats per minute, and we put a modulator on at the end. And I'm thinking, Joan, no one gives a shit about this at all. Like, no one cares what key you decided to write this in. You know what I mean?
Oh, so that's we went in, so funny. You know,
but I did kind of sneak around on the second half of the interview. And basically, I knew something that almost nobody else knew. I said, so, Joan, you're a New York Dolls fan, right? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, I love the New York Dolls, Joan. And so I heard that you stole Dave Johansson's beer bottle once. And she said that once in an interview like 30 years ago, right? So she forgot that she said that. So then we started rapping about the New York Dolls, and then I got around that, and then we got some, not personal stuff, but some human stuff in there. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
If you get the chance to interview Joan Jett, do not ask about the germs, people. Not ask about the germs.
Wait, what happened when you asked her about the germs?
Well, I mean, listen, Joan was very cool. Almost like Lemmy, was a super cool interviewer, and that he's there to interview. He's not going to tell, you know, when I was seven, you know, my uncle really hurt my feel. Like, he's not going to tell you that. But Lemmy will just rap with you. You know, Joan's kind of the same way. But I love Pung, and Joan Jett produced the Germs record. You know, I'm like, so Joan, what was that those sessions like? And it kind of bummed her out, because I made the boat . For me, it's this iconic record. From her perspective, it's the record she produced where her good friend died not that long afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, a boneheaded manu. But I stayed with the Dave Johansson, you know. So, Joan Jett, two thumbs up for sure. Here's another thing of a band that's been around a long time. And I have, I don't know about mixed feelings on this, but I've got feelings on this. John Lanelve Might Be Giants is going to release a new digital EP on Friday. So tomorrow, by the time you hear this, it'll be out probably. It's called Roman Songs, and the kicker is every single song is sung in classical Latin, which is a neat thing. The song itself is kind of a robo new wave kind of thing. Hallie Bullitt, what'd you think of this? And is this too nerdy, too cutie-wootsy, or just nerdy and cutie-wootsy enough?
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. The music, to be honest, was a little annoying to me, but this is the ultimate pandemic project, right? Like, this whole thing epitomizes what kind of artistic rabbit hole you can fall into when you are trapped in your house with nothing to do, just slowly losing your mind. John Linnell is a weird guy, but this is weird even for him. And I think, you know, he obviously knows he's releasing it as a digital EP, but I sat down and the video for this is has some like interesting animation, and it translates the lyrics from the Latin into English, and the phrases are all really simple, but it really does add up into a very They Might Be Giants kind of like funny, smart, nerdy song. I'm fully in support of this, just as a thing that I think it seems like he did to keep himself busy during the pandemic. And I it's, people are either going to think it's funny and they're going to check it out, or they're going to, yeah, like you said, John, they're just going to think it's too precious or too cutesy wootsy. And I think They Might Be Giants has always kind of walked, that line, right? But I don't know. I think this is smart and super, super funny.
I enjoyed this quite a bit. I think it's an interesting project. I don't think anyone's ever done this before. I thought it was interesting in that he double or triple tracked his vocals, so it sounded like a Catholic mass, which him using Latin to me is him reaching back to ancient Rome, you know, but then he triple tracked the vocals, so it sounded like a Catholic mass, I guess, which I thought was an interesting selection, because in a horror movie, they'll always have a Catholic mass and triple track the vocals, so it sounds satanic, even though, yes, it's actually, you know. So I wonder if he was doing that on purpose, I thought the song was cool. I also, the lyrics are about, well, the lyrics are either about living a modern life or it's kind of like an Aristotelian comment on existence itself. I guess it's really more kind of that. So I wondered if it's more interesting if he does the lyrics set in modern life or if the lyrics are from the perspective of an ancient Roman with modern music in the background. You know, I guess either is interesting. I think he's a very cool and interesting project. He did say one thing that kind of annoyed me, and I've got a little bit of a hot take here, and maybe Em and Hallie will disagree with my opinion here, and that's fine. And he was like, all I can tell you is I'm deeply jealous of people who are fluent in a second language and can apply that skill to the creative work that doesn't seem like cultural appropriation of the most embarrassing and offensive kind. Is he saying that if you sing in another language that's not yours, that's cultural appropriation? Is that what he's saying?
I think he's saying that for him, it might come off that way. If he were to just like suddenly release like a Spanish language album, it might, you know, maybe, I don't know that I think that's what he was saying, that like for someone like him, that's just like a white guy who doesn't know a second language. He has to like figure out a way to like, I don't know, to do that. I don't know. What it like, what, so it annoyed you. What it like, in what way?
And first of all, like, let's say he sings his album in Spanish. Cultural appropriation is where you say you're taking the art of another culture and claiming it as your own. If he's singing in Spanish, no one thinks he's Spanish or Hispanic, you know, like we're all aware that he's just, but he's promoting, in my perspective, cultural segregation, which is, kind of the worst thing is the beauty of art and music is that there isn't like there is almost no art out there that isn't a collision of cultures. Rock and roll is a collision of white and black music. I mean, that's what rock and roll is, you know. Very few. I mean, you can make the argument hip hop certainly was invented and has been mastered and has been pushed along by people of black people, black American people. That being said, it's not created in isolation. The earliest hip-hop shows were built off Kraftwerk, German dudes, you know, and that's not that Germans created hip-hop, because they certainly didn't, but it's that use of other culture, which is what creates interesting art. So to use another culture and automatically use of that culture as cultural appropriation seems so antithetical to arts and critical thinking, and to me seemed to be Dark Age thinking, which is ironic because it's a Latin song which precedes the Dark Ages. Also, I will add, and this is going to be a too cute argument. He says, I want to culturally appropriate. Linnell's not an Italian name, so why can he use Latin, you see? Like, if he did, it wouldn't it be a cultural appropriation if he did, like I don't know, an Aztec? Like, no one speaks Aztec anymore. Would that be cultural? You know what I mean? And I realize that's a too cute argument. And this is just I don't dislike John, or I just think that comment was a little too cute. And I don't even think he's mean-spirited. I just think he's being a little too careful and a little too, I got to protect myself here, because I think he's arguing for cultural segregation rather than cultural communication, which I think is a big misstep.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, not to get off on like a whole political tangent, but like, I think about this stuff too, John, and I think about I don't know how many punks like appreciate these albums, but they were like big when I was growing up and they were huge to me. Like, I loved those Paul Simon albums where he, what was it, like Graceland and Rhythm of the Saints. Like, I love those albums. And I often wonder now, like, if an artist could, like Paul Simon, could make those albums without it being considered cultural appropriation. And I haven't really read any, like, modern, like, sort of takes on those albums. Like, I still love them. I don't have a problem with them. I don't know if retroactively, if anyone else sort of culturally has decided to have a problem with them or not. But like, I just to say, I think about this stuff all the time too. And like, that we do need to borrow from one another's cultures. It's a big sign of respect, right? You know, so like, yeah, I think this was a throwaway comment. I don't really actually think that John Linnell wanted us to have this whole like conversation about this, but it's interesting what you bring up. But like, but certainly cultural appropriation does happen, and it is hurtful to people when it happens in a thoughtless way. So I think it's good that people are at least, you know, I think it's good that people are thinking about these things and asking themselves hard questions. before they are borrowing something from a culture that's not theirs. Do you know what I mean?
And more, John Linnell, tastefully maneuvering the niceties, no, not the niceties, the dangers of modern cultural discussion, or dumbass that, that spits crap out of his mouth. Where do you stand?
I don't think he really needed to make the cultural appropriation comment, just because, yeah, like, again, it's, you're learning to speak a language, you're keeping that, like, that language alive, you know, like, that's not a bad thing. Like, I think, you know, like, there are other things that are cultural appropriation, but I don't necessarily think that, like, learning, like, a language would be, like, with Latin or, you know, like, with French or, you know, whatever, you learn it, you continue its existence, and I think that's pretty cool. The song was interesting. I like the way Latin sounds. I think it's really cool. I tried to learn part of it because of The Exorcist, and I learned how to say, I could do, It's a Wonderful Day for an Exorcism in Reagan's voice, and I can't do that anymore. But, you know, it's a cool language to hear, because it is, like, it, you know, very historical, but it's also really kind of, like, creepy, and it's neat. So I think this is cool.
We just got such a glimpse into M. Moore and what... sorry, go ahead, John.
Indeed we did. One last story for tonight. Turnstile, they surprise released a new EP. It's called Turnstile Love Connection, and it has four songs: Holiday, No Surprise, Mystery, and Turnstile Love Connection. I think it was Mystery, I think, was the song that was previously released. It's out now, and it follows Time and Space from 2018, and people were freaking out over this and loving it. Hallie Bullet, were you freaking out over this and loving it, or
what
do you think of?
Now, first I want you to say how you didn't like it.
I didn't hate it. I did hate when they released the first single. I did hate it. I'm like, what is this bullshit? Because, like, for being the true blue punk rocker that I am, anytime everybody loves something, I automatically hate it. And everyone loved Turnstile, but what annoyed me about Turnstile, it was like, yeah, Turnstile's like the best hardcore band. I'm like, this is not hardcore. This is like 90s rock, you know? And I still, like, I don't know why, like, not, I don't care if a band's not hardcore. I like lots of bands that aren't hardcore. I just don't know why people keep saying Turnstile is hardcore. There's nothing hardcore about this at all. It's 90s radio rock. That being said, I was intrigued. They write good melodies. I wish the melodies were hookier, like a pop melody. However, I did like how they kind of combined radio rock with kind of like spacey electronic music, which I've been listening to. I've been listening to a lot of like synth punk lately, and honestly, I might be burning out on it, but I like how they've got like these robot sounds in the back and stuff. So I didn't hate it, and I thought this was more interesting than their previous stuff, but it actually seemed like people were maybe a little put off by the machine sounds or whatever. I don't know. Like, I think people are way too willing to say, well, people say they love Turnstile and they're like, oh, Turnstile is the best. And I don't want to name, I've gone to shows where people are like, oh, I love Japandroids, right? People are like, oh, I love Japandroids. I'm like, oh, I'll go see what this is about. And it was a sold out show and the band played and they were fine. And after the show, everyone was like, yeah, that was a great show. Yeah, that was great. You know what happens after you leave the Melvins, or after you leave Slayer, or after you leave Sister Nancy, or after you leave Yellow Man? People are like, holy shit, I can't believe what I just saw. You know, people are like freaking out. After the band I was just talking about. What band was I just talking about? People are like, yeah, that was cool. That was great.
Band sucks live. That's not a good example. That's a band that I would say is like good recorded, and then you go to see them live, and I don't think it doesn't hold up to me.
Maybe that's why I didn't like it live. Maybe that's why I was so underwhelmed. You know? Anyways, people are freaking out over Turnstile like it's the newest thing ever, and to me it sounds like radio rock. And actually, I think this is better than their earlier stuff. I liked how it's got like the spacey music in it, but I don't see how it's hardcore. And I don't see how, and not that I care, I'm just annoyed by that constant connection. And I just don't see why people are freaking out over it so much. I think it's okay. Would I buy it? Would I go see them? No. Do I think it's acceptable? Yes. Hallie Bullitt, defense.
I love that you at least think it's acceptable. You'll accept it. I love it. I loved it. Now, wait, but with regards to the hardcore thing, okay, so, like, this band, like, reminds me actually a lot, especially just, like, the poppy nature of it and just that guy's voice reminds me a lot of the stuff that I liked that Shelter put out in the 90s. Like, do you consider that, like, poppy or Shelter stuff to be, like, do you think of that as a hardcore band or no?
I would make the argument that if Shelter didn't have the Youth of Today connection, no one would call them hardcore. They would get called emo or post-hardcore.
All right. Interesting. Okay. I think of Shelter as hardcore, and so I think of this as hardcore because I think they share a lot of things that I like. I loved that that first track, Holiday, was like, to me, was like Shelter meets like Sleigh Bells. It had like this very like repetitive kind of droney guitar thing happening like over and over again in a way that I was like super, super into. Just the production was very like Sleigh Bells to me. And I don't know, I thought this like, I thought this short film was cool. Yeah, just like super, super well shot. It wasn't like I don't know. It didn't like artistically as a short film, it didn't like blow me away, but it was just like a lot of really cool images that I thought enhanced the music. And I really liked every song. I thought every song was like pretty, pretty cool on this. And I really enjoyed watching the video. I watched it like a number of times. Actually, I showed it to my son who's two, and he said he referred to himself in the third person. I don't know why, because he doesn't really do that anymore. He's like beyond that stage in his like language development. Like at first all little kids all say like, oh, Johnny likes trucks. Like they always refer themselves in the third person. But Cal normally says I now, but then when it came to this, he said, Cal said that was really cool. So, yeah. So my son and I were both super into this. Em, is this hardcore?
I don't know. I didn't really like Mystery when it came out. I tried to give it a shot. It didn't really do anything. So with this, I had very low expectations, and people, there's not many comments on it, but people in the comments really liked it, so I was like, oh, okay. So I went in with like no expectations. I really liked Holiday. It was cool. No Surprise was all right. I liked TLC. Mystery's still kind of, I don't really know. It was better with a visual, I found, which I don't really know what that says, but the short film was really interesting too, just with like all the people, and then there's like some crossover and everything. It was shot really well. I kept waiting for something to, like, go wrong, you know, where it's, like, everyone seems to be having an all right time, and I'm just waiting for something to, like, you know, then the tornado blew through, or somebody came out with a chainsaw, you know, I'm just, like, I'm waiting for something to drop, and it didn't, so I was like, oh, that's nice. So it was nice and calm, and it complemented the music well, so, yeah, it was pretty good. It was better than I thought it was going to be. For sure.
I wonder if it was like just the use of the word like short film, like you were expecting it to have like a story and like in order for it to tell a story, it would have to have like some like conflict, but it's not really right. It's not trying to tell a story. At least to me, it wasn't. It was just like some cool images that, yeah, just like enhanced. But I but that makes me laugh to think of you like waiting for a tornado. You're like, when is someone gonna get shot? When is the plot gonna thicken here?
Yeah, just waiting.
And more contains multitudes. I'm going to do one last quick story here. And I don't know if Em and Hallie have an opinion or not. Is LA Punkers Section Hate have a new song, release a new song. It's called Street Sweeper. It's out July 30th via Flat Spot Records. The record is called Welcome to the Nightmare. I don't know if that's an Oscar Grammy homage or not. But Street Sweeper has Tim Armstrong. And all I'm going to say is it's a hardcore song with Tim Armstrong singing hardcore. Why doesn't Tim Armstrong sing hardcore all the time? Because the last three Rancid records have been so mediocre. And then when Tim does shred up hardcore, like hardcore punk, that is not hardcore, hardcore, it's friggin' awesome. And I wish Tim sang like this all the time. And more, agree or disagree, Tim Armstrong should only do hardcore punk from now on.
Agreed, 100%. And the band, they're selling an 8-inch mini baseball bat on their website. I'm not kidding. I wrote it down. I had to say it. I like the song. The song is good.
you know, at Punk News, we made fun of that before, you know.
Yeah.
The mini Hallie baseball bat?
Yeah, see, like Rancid's big thing for a while is like they didn't do this once. They did it like four times. They would put out like a new record. And you could get a mini Rancid baseball, like an 8-inch baseball bat that said Rancid. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. I don't think Rancid is like big baseball fans, so I think they're trying to like say like they're hooligans and they beat people to death with baseball bats. But when you have an 8-inch baseball bat, it's not nearly as menacing. So on one April Fool's, we issued Punk News baseball bats, and that's pretty much when our relationship with Pirates Press went to crap.
Love that. That's awesome.
Hallie Bullet, Tim Armstrong doing hardcore. Awesome or really awesome?
Fine.
Bam! Hallie Bullet, play a song that's not fine. Play a song that's great.
I'm super into this. Okay, so speaking of bands that I like, John, you were saying like you didn't want to order the like Circle Jerks Group Sex T-shirt. I just got turned on to this band. My friend Brendan McKnight, who I think I've talked about on the podcast before, he's just like a really cool music video director. He's done stuff for Mikey Erg. Like Big Eyes, like a bunch of New York bands, because he's based in New York. But he directed a video for this band that was just not on my radar, and I'm so glad that they are now. They're called Prism Bitch from Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's a quartet. It's like three gals and a guy, and the gals, I think all three of them sing. And I haven't done like a deep dive on the band. It sounds to me like a lot of different members of the band are doing the writing as well, because this album is like, you guys, the newer album is called Perla, and I'm telling you, there's like stuff on here for you, John Gentile. There's stuff on here for you, M. Moore. Like, it's like I can't guarantee you'll like the whole album, but the album kind of goes in a bunch of different directions in a way that's like really interesting to me, and I just really liked a lot of it. Some of it's new wavy, some of it's like more screamy and punky. And to me, just like all of it's interesting, and I like how it's executed, and I'm really, really looking forward to like checking out more stuff from this band. Cause I, you know, like I said, I like kind of just got turned on to them, but, so yeah, this is the song that my friend Brendan directed the video for. It's called, two, like Roman numeral two. And it's, the video is really worth checking out. I think it's like, again, it's one of those things where just the visuals like sort of just help you like take in the song. The song is funny and screamy and really, really cool. I like this band is doing. I'll stop talking about it and I'll play the song. This is Prism Bitch doing this song too, and it's off their album Perla.
Tell me about it, stud.
Getting $100 a day. Thank you.
and that was Prison Bitch doing 2 off the album Perla, produced by Toshi Kasai, who of course is the Melvins' main producer, Toshi Kasai, co-producer, and was also in a band with Dale Crover called Dumb Numbers of the Melvins.
Nice. I'm telling you, I think there's things about this album you're really going to like, John.
I shall listen. So that about wraps up. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Be sure to check out Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History Leftover Crack, coming out August 10. We're starting a limited podcast where I'm going to meet Brad and myself are going to interview members of the band and other people about the band and what was happening. And listen, people, the book's getting good reviews and people are freaked out by some of the contents, but that's Leftover Crack. So you can get that at Rare Bird Books. You can get it off Amazon too, but if you want to be cool, get off Rare Bird Books, because that comes signed by yours truly and Brad Logan, and that's the Architects of Self-Destruction. And more, anything you want the listeners to know about or maybe you just want to tell them where they can buy my book in Canada.
Order it from Chapters. You get free shipping. You don't get John's signature, though, which sucks. But you get free – well, better shipping. Not free shipping. Better shipping. Also, if you don't well, yeah, that's it.
Fair enough. Hallie Bullitt, last word. What do you got to say to the listeners?
No, I used up all my last words on Prism, bitch. What are your
All right, my last words are by Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History Leftover Crack, out August 10 via Rare Bird Records. We'll see you next week, and then the week after that is episode 550, where we're going to do Story Week. We'll see you then.
Ciao, Bella.